This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's have some fun. On a Friday, it's an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Put a smile on your face. The sun is out, at least where I am. Life is good. The week is over. The weekend is here. And here's what we have on tap for tonight. It's going to be a blast. One, we're going to talk about the phases, how we're in kind of the revolution phase. What are the phases that come after that, especially for cities, for big cities? Why do dudes want to be taller? The national debt. Who do we actually owe this debt to? What's my favorite sword? Someone wants to know the greatest gas station in America. All that, so much more. We're going to have fun tonight on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. I want to begin here, though. Before we do anything else, before we get into questions or anything else, I want to get into a little bit of the why so we can understand how the communist operates and what they're doing. And they do this very, very, very well. I'm going to play something for you here really quickly. This is some commie nutball on MSNBC. Now, don't try to set your anger aside at the ridiculousness of what she's saying for a moment. We're going to talk about, remember, we never focus on the headline or the specific soundbite. What are they doing? They speak with a purpose. Remember, they're really good at that, and we are really bad at that. When the communist speaks, he speaks with a purpose. The language he uses it purposefully. The right does not. The right will just say either whatever's on their mind, or even worse, the right will oftentimes adopt the language of the communist. You know, that's what everyone's saying. Yes, what everyone's saying is probably a communist word. Watching the right slowly but surely go from calling illegals to migrants has been enough to make me pull what very little hair I have left out of my head. So let's understand they speak with a purpose. And they attack with a purpose. So, listen really closely to this.
The one thing that unites all of them, because there's many different groups orbiting Trump, but the thing that unites them as Christian nationalists, not Christians, by the way, because Christian nationalists is very different, mm-hmm. is that they believe that our rights as Americans, as all human beings, don't come from any earthly authority. They don't come from Congress. They don't come from the Supreme Court. They come from God.
Okay. Here's what you're hearing there. Set aside your anger or your offense or whatever, if you have any of that. Christian nationalists. You're going to hear that word more and more and more. And you've been hearing that word a lot. Christian nationalists. And here's a lot of the response I'm seeing. And maybe this has been your response from the right when we hear that word. It'll be responses like, well, what does that even mean? What, a Christian nationalist? I don't understand. What are they saying? It doesn't matter what they're saying. It matters why they're saying it. The why behind how the communist talks and what the communist says. That's what's most important. The why. It was talked about a long time ago. Back when Barack Obama was running for president, people began to start looking into his radical background of all the communists who influenced him, who he studied, and many people began to hear the name Saul Alinsky for the very first time. Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky was a committed street communist. He was also an intelligent individual who understood how to attack and destroy a society. And he wrote a book that I can't believe I'm trying to encourage you to buy a book and fund whatever dirtball commies are behind it. But he wrote a book that I really do think would be helpful for everyone to buy. You don't have to, by the way. I know money doesn't grow on trees, but it's called Rules for Radicals. You've probably heard of this from back in the day. If you can't buy the book or don't want to, just don't worry about it. But I want to bring up a certain part, because this is what America's communists do all the time, and they do it so effectively, and we don't see what they're doing clearly enough on the right, and we have to fix that. He's got a bunch of different rules for radicals, and I'm not going to go over it all. I'm not going to read the whole book, but one of his rules, it's rule number 12, is this. Pick a target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. pick a target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. This will come back to Christian nationalism in a moment. Let me ask you something. Before or prior to a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, when's the last time you heard Clarence Thomas's name on liberal lips in this country? I know you've heard it before, but you've never heard it this much, have you? Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court, Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, radical Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, Clarence Thomas, Clarence Thomas must recuse, Clarence Thomas this, Clarence Thomas that. Why now, though? And don't do the pathetic right-wing thing that I hear all the time. It's so stupid. It's because Democrats are the real racists. Oh, shut up. That's so lame. No, they're not. Actually, they don't care about race. They care about power. They will attack anyone who holds them back from power and reward anyone who gives it to them. It's not because they're the real racists. Why Clarence Thomas? Why the Supreme Court? Because they identified a problem for them. They're tearing through the country like a wildfire right now. Unconstitutional thing after unconstitutional thing, against the law, against the law, against the law. And yes, they're being very successful in a lot of ways, but a lot of big things they're trying are being hampered by the Supreme Court. So what did they do? Well, they picked a target. They froze it. They personalized it. It's Clarence Thomas, after all. Did you know that Clarence Thomas is the reason you can't abort your baby? You don't have human rights because of Clarence Thomas. And they polarized it. Now, Clarence Thomas is on the lips of every communist in this country. They simply instinctively know that's who we're supposed to be attacking. Attack the Supreme Court, attack Clarence Thomas. They're doing the same thing in many different ways. In many different ways they're doing this. They're doing the same thing right now with Christianity, with Catholicism, frankly, with Orthodox Judaism, and on a smaller level, they're doing this with Islam in America. Remember, communism is not only a religion, it's an exclusive one and a jealous one. Communists do not share power with other religions. They never have. From Stalin tearing down the Russian Orthodox churches to Mao tearing down the Buddhist temples. Communists do not share power. You go look at Spain, raping the nuns and crucifying the priests. Communists do not share power with the other religion of the country. And right now, there's a problem for communists in this country. The problem is not all of the America's churches, because a lot of America's churches are weak and pathetic and lame, but the evangelical base of this nation. Pick a number, 30, 40, 50 million of them. That's a lot of people. And what they want, what they believe, is a problem for the communist. This whole right and wrong, don't steal, man and a woman, Ten Commandments thing, all this stuff is against the communist. And so they need to attack the church. That's what they really want. That, look, if these people had their way, understand this, you can roll your eyes all you want. If these people had their way, they would already have the FBI at your church arresting your pastor and anyone else who didn't agree that they're never coming to church again. They would, without a moment of hesitation, if they thought they could get away with it, that's exactly what they would do, and probably worse. That's what these people would do, because it's what communists have always done. But they can't do that here. As of right now, they can't do that here. They don't have the authority. So what are they doing? Well, they've picked a target, and they're freezing it and trying to find a way to freeze and personalize and polarize it. So how do you do that? Well, you don't want to attack Christianity outright because of how many Americans identify as Christians. You want to instead turn Christianity into something nefarious sounding that doesn't even really mean anything. But Christian nationalism, wow, that sounds almost racist. That's not, you see, listen to how she chooses her words. And you notice how she even throws in the little qualifying there. Not Christianity, guys. I'm not talking about Christianity. Christian nationalism.
The one thing that unites all of them, because there's many different groups orbiting Trump, but the thing that unites them as Christian nationalists, not Christians, by the way, because Christian nationalists is very different, is that they...
See, they're not Christians, guys. I'm only talking about the nationalists. What are they doing? Oh, they're attacking Christianity.
they're attacking America's church. They will continue to throw in those little disclaimers. Oh, not Christianity, guys. To try the best they can to do what they've done so well is keep the right calm and unaware of what they're doing. Well, they're not talking about me. I just go to church on Sunday and I believe in Jesus, but I'm not a nationalist. Making sure you stay calm while they stand behind you and get ready to fire a bullet in the back of your head. That's what they're doing. They do it over and over and over again. I'll continue on this in just a moment.
Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, reminding you, you can email the show. We're live here, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. And I am going to get to the Ask Dr. Jesse questions. I'm just, in case you're just joining us, I'm talking about communist tactics and how they use language and how, just like Saul Alinsky wrote so long ago, they will pick a target. Whatever is becoming a problem for them, or they think is going to be a problem for them, or one last wall that's in their way, and they will pick a target, they will freeze it, they will personalize it, and they will polarize it. They're doing this with the Supreme Court and Clarence Thomas. They've done this very successfully. They did this years ago with Trump. That ship has sailed. They picked him, they froze him, they personalized it, they polarized it. That's why if you ask your liberal Aunt Peggy why she hates Donald Trump, she actually can't give you a great answer. And if she brings up insurrection, January 6th, and you ask her, okay, well, yeah, you're right. Oh, it was terrible insurrection. So do you liked him before that? She'll say, well, no. And you ask her why? I guarantee you she will not be able to answer. It'll be some kind of platitude. Well, it's racist. She won't have an answer because she doesn't know. Why doesn't she know? Because the system decided for her that's the enemy. They picked him. They froze him. They personalized him. They polarized him. In her mind, reasons or not, reasons don't matter. In her mind, that's the height of all evil. They're doing it to the Supreme Court. And they're coming for the American church. I cannot stress this enough. You Christians out there, that memo from the FBI Richmond field office was not some kind of a one-off. That was one piece of paper from one field office. It would be like sitting in front of a stack of 10,000 pieces of paper and knocking it all over and picking up one piece of paper that says, hey, we're going to infiltrate these churches and go after them. And the FBI went before Congress and they said, what? That was a one-off. That's one field office. If you knocked over 10,000 pieces of paper and only had access to one piece and the piece talked about infiltrating the churches, would you believe that's the only piece of paper in that stack that talked about infiltrating the churches? Be serious. This has now become part of our national security apparatus attacking the American church. And they will attack the American church by labeling Christians and Christianity as Christian nationalists. And they will pacify American Christians while they do this by constantly throwing in these disclaimers that it's not Christianity. I'm not against Christianity. It's just these nationalists. And you know what that does? It tells everyone who hears it that, hey, yeah, they're attacking somebody, but it's not me. Of course, they're not after me. It's just, it's that guy. It's someone over there or someone in the other church or the next town over or maybe this church, but not my church. That's why you'll hear these disclaimers a lot. These nationalists, but not Christianity, though. I mean, definitely not Christianity,
guys. One
thing
that unites all of them, because there's many different groups orbiting Trump, but the thing that unites them as Christian nationalists, not Christians, by the way, because Christian nationalist is very different, mm-hmm. is that they believe...
Very, very different. No. I'm not talking to you. Not about you. No. Someone else. I don't have anything else to add, except I'm sure you're probably thinking right now of a million different ways they do this. How they pick one, they freeze it, they personalize it, and polarize it. This has been a tactic they have used very successfully for decades. They're way better about it now. And I mean, way better about it now. And the reason they're better about it now is not because they've improved their techniques. It's because they've seized more and more control over our institutions. It's one thing to pick and freeze and personalize and polarize in 1960 or 70 when the communists were really out of power in the country. It's another thing entirely when you control the FBI, when you control corporate America. Remember that Google stuff, that Google AI stuff we talked about from yesterday? That's the most powerful corporation probably on planet Earth. And America-hating, white-hating, Christian-hating, capitalism-hating communists control the thing, and they're using their power. It gives these people more freedom than they ever had before to pick a target, personalize it, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. This is how they have moved their agenda into the mainstream, a radical, insane, evil agenda. Listen to UPS. Listen to this from UPS.
People look at me like I'm a unicorn. They've never seen me before, and by me, a black female pilot. My name is Angel Hughes, and I am a first officer at UPS. I fly the Boeing 757 and also the 767. I've been in aviation since I was a young girl, all the way up through my adult life. I'd only seen maybe a handful of black female pilots. So I created my own organization, Sisters of the Skies. The mission of SOS is to increase the amount of black female pilots, and UPS invests in those programs. I believe
Sisters of the Sky. Oh, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. You thought that was bad? Want to hear how bad it's gotten? What I read this morning out of Microsoft, honestly, it's not what they're doing that shocked me. That they actually put it in writing is what blew me away. Wait, do I read this to you? I'll read it to you in a second. And then I swear we're moving on to Ask Dr. Jesse questions and other things. Now, it is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. And on my life, I'm getting to the questions. Next, I just wanted to finish up the news of the day with this one here. How bad is that? What's that word? Chris, it starts with an S. That term really got hot after St. George Floyd died. Systemic racism. That's the term, systemic racism. How bad is it? Well, what I'm about to read you, I want you to understand, it's not some inside scoop I got. I actually want to credit Libs of TikTok with it. She's the one who dug it up. But this is available for the public. This isn't some secret memo that got passed around. This is from Microsoft. They just put it in writing now. That's how bold the communists has gotten. Anyway, I'm going to read it to you verbatim. As of September 2023, inside the U.S., all racial and ethnic minority groups who are rewards eligible combined earned $1,007 total pay for every $1,000 earned by U.S. rewards eligible white employees with the same job title and level and considering tenure. That's the first paragraph of them bragging about how much less they pay whitey than other people. Oh, you thought that was it? U.S. black and African employees earn $1,004. Hispanic and Latinx employees earn $1,004. Asian employees earn $1,012 figures. For every $1,000 earned by U.S. rewards eligible white employees. I could keep reading on and on and on. They simply lay out in writing, bragging, not hiding it, bragging that whitey, we pay him less. That's how bad it's gotten. Whew, quite a place to be. All right, enough. Let's move on to other things. We got to get to some Ask Dr. Jesse stuff. That's enough garbage for a Friday. Hola, tall drink of agua. Chris, that means hello. Do you think your life would be different if you were shorter? I mean, like a foot shorter. Let's say I know a dude who's smart, handsome, athletic, successful, has a gorgeous wife, straight A, kind of funny teenage son. But said dude insists his life would be different, even better, if he was taller. As a small female, I only care if a dude's taller than me. But what is this thing with dudes wanting to be taller than standing to the guy next to him? Or do you even understand the plight of short dudes? I think you would be somewhere else. Typed on the Pure Talk phone, so I get to, she requested.
You know, freedom is not free.
And her name is Carly. Okay, 5'1" dime Carly. Let's let me explain something. Maybe this is hard for women to understand, and I understand. Sometimes it's hard for women to understand men. Sometimes it's hard for men to understand women. So let me explain something. Dudes compete with each other. Not in the vicious kind of backstabbing way women do, more in the in-your-face way. And every single dude on the planet, without exception, wants to be the biggest, strongest dude on the planet. He wants to be the biggest, strongest dude in whatever room he's in. Now, don't get me wrong. It takes on different forms as you get older. It's not as if I walk in a room now and I see a dude that I don't think I can take and I'm mean mugging him and I'm sitting and I'm stewing about it. It's not that. It's not that. But if I have my choice, I will be bigger, stronger, and more powerful than every dude I meet or interact with. That doesn't make me abnormal. That's a dude. And that's how all dudes are. And they're that way from a very, very early age. From my earliest age, that's how you are. And that's part of the reason why dudes do dangerous things with their friends. Who's tougher? Who can handle it? That's a big reason why dudes, ladies, have you ever been horrified by how dudes talk to each other? Do you get maybe horrified or uncomfortable when I make fun of the other branches of service, the lesser branches that aren't Marines? When I talk about the LGBTQ Air Force, do you maybe wince a little bit? You know why we do that, right? Beyond the inter-service rivalry stuff. Well, we do that, we jab at each other to see who can take it and how much you can take. And the dude who whines about it, he is automatically, I don't care who you are, whoever whines about it is automatically lesser in the eyes of all of his boys. The dude who gives it right back, just as good, okay, he's cool. If I walk in the room with an Air Force guy and I immediately drop
"Why are you gay?"
And he responds back, "Yeah, whatever, you stupid crayon eater." Him and me, we're going to get along just fine. He can handle it. He gives it right back. We're good. You remember that one email I got from that Air Force dork? "I was so offended by your criticism of a fellow veteran." Dork. He and I will never hang out, never want to know him, never want to be around him. Why? Shows weakness. You're offended? Men are constantly, it's not a small deal. If I could explain it to women, you want to be prettier than other girls, do you not? I know you compete, and I know it may not be an obsession of yours, and I hope it's not, right? Because God made everybody different. Tall, short, skinny, fat, beautiful, or on the view, right? It runs the spectrum. But it's that kind of a competition with dudes. And height it's more of a mental perception thing, because some of the toughest dudes in the world, they're not 6'8". Right? Those UFC fighters, half those guys are like 5'8". Right? It's not that. But the perception of being more powerful, the perception is what matters. That's what it is. I'm far, far from the baddest dude on the block, believe me. There are 7 billion people on the planet. Probably about 3 billion of them can beat me up. I'm far from the baddest dude on the block. But the perception of power and strength, that matters a lot. How would my life be different? I don't know, but I probably would not have had some of the opportunities I had. Look, I might not have gotten my wife. I'll be honest with you. You ask her to this day. Now, she would probably not want to sound quite so shallow, but you ask her to this day. It's the first thing she saw. First time I met her, walked in. She was living with the roommate, walked in her house to pick her up. And you should have seen her eyes light up first time I saw her. And she'll tell you to this day, "Well, he was so tall. He's so tall. What if I walked in and I was 5'8"? Well, then I really got to turn on the charm, right? I might not have been successful at all running for Congress. And I know you're laughing because I lost twice, but I won both primaries. Maybe that mattered. Stood on that debate stage with my other primary opponents, a foot taller than everyone else. It matters. There's a reason not many presidents have been short. Not very many presidents at all. And then you'll have to look this one up. No, don't look it up, Chris. Don't. It doesn't matter. But in the television era, I don't know that any have been shorter than 5'10", something like that. There have not been many. It's one of Trump's great advantages. Trump is 6'2". And love him or hate him, it's visually, it matters when you're looking at them on stage. It does matter. Now, That said, I think a lot of dudes who aren't tall put too much into it. I honestly, who really cares? It's fun to make fun of short dudes, but God made us all different. He made us all different. Hey, believe me, your back's probably going to hold up better than mine is. I'm 6'8". It's just the way it goes. If I ever have a booger in my nose, everyone can see it because I'm standing above everybody, and that's basically the grossest thing in the history of mankind. What, Chris? Yep, that's a good point, Chris. See, of course, Chris would worry about money. I have to special order pants. When I go buy shoes, if I'm buying them online, because we all buy them online now, very rarely can I find my size. I wear 14s or 15s and whatever it may be. Very rarely can I find my size. I don't fit in most cars. When I say don't fit in, I can get in it, but it gets real uncomfortable real fast. I don't have headroom, or I'm sitting there and my head is... I've had many times where my head, especially if I'm in the back seat of like an Uber or something, my head is pressed against the roof. It's awful. There are, just accept whatever. Accept what you are. All right, enough of that. Let's talk about the communist phases in the cities, because we've been talking about this. We've been talking about New York and the illegals and Alvin Bragg and what's happening in the cities. And
you're listening to the Jesse Kelly Show. You're welcome.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. I still remember where I was when I found out Vanilla Ice is not actually that guy's real name. It was quite a shock to me. It's quite a shock to me. I know it's a shock to you. Nevertheless, it's true. It's an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Remember, though, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Google, Spotify, and iTunes. It's an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and I haven't gotten to a single Ask Dr. Jesse question yet, so I think maybe we should start that right about now. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I did. I answered the tall one last time. Hey, No Floss Kelly, you periodically talk about how we're in the anarchy phase of communism where criminals get to do as they please. Then at some point, the government will then instill severe communistic rules and crack down. I disagree. I do not see a crackdown coming, and the government leaders just want a steady decline of habitual living within these blue areas. They don't even care about financial loss of business or tax revenue. They just want destruction and severe poverty. Says I can say his name. His name is Steve. Okay. Not really. Now, let me explain. We are, in case you're a new listener, historically, during the revolutionary phase of communism, communists have not discouraged, but encouraged violent crime. Now, what kind? Are they organizing all of it? No, my gosh, no. They don't have to. In the Soviet Union, they didn't have to organize crime. They did organize crime, but they simply opened up the prisons. They did. They got the keys, and they walked into the prisons, and they just said, hey, you're all free. Enjoy. Bunch of murderers and rapists and robbers then went out. It began to attack the citizenry. And not only did they begin to attack the citizenry, they did so with the aid and comfort of the Bolsheviks, who were in the process of taking power. And when I say with the aid and comfort, I mean Solzhenitsyn wrote about this. You can go read it. If you were a normal person, in fact, actually, there's a story about a guy. He was a veteran, and he got attacked by a murderer with a knife. And the veteran managed to disarm the murderer with the knife and kill him because he was trained and whatnot. They sent the veteran to prison. And the veteran, during his trial, said, what was I supposed to do? And I said, well, you should have ran away. Remember Daniel Penny in New York? The veteran who stopped the murderous piece of trash from hurting people on a subway? Facing, what is it, second-degree murder? Manslaughter? I forget what it is, but facing the prime years of his life in New York State Prison. The communists in America are not following some brand new playbook they've come up with. They're doing the same thing communists have done in society after society after society. There's a reason I've screamed endlessly about calling DAs like Alvin Bragg soft on crime. That's the wrong language. Again, back to being purposeful with our language. They're not soft on crime. They're not naive. They don't just have a different view of criminal justice, much more nice. They're pro-rape DAs. They are pro-murder DAs. If you could sit Alvin Bragg down and hook him up to a lie detector test, you would find out that that rapist he turned loose, who went on and raped another 10 women before they caught him again, is exactly what he wanted to happen. That's what he wants. And more importantly, George Soros and those types who fund guys like Alvin Bragg, that's what they want, because guys like Soros understand full well that that's how you get a communist revolution in a country. You need violent crime during the revolution phase. You have to have it because it destabilizes society. People get scared. People don't know what to do. And eventually people will naturally turn to an all-powerful government and say, save us, save us. It's why they flooded the country with illegals. They understand that gangs and murders and rapists and drugs are pouring into the country. They want it. It's what they want. It's their goal. But it is not, absolutely not, the end goal. You see, this is what people don't understand when they talk about, hey, they just want to burn everything down. And they do want to burn everything down. But they don't actually want to rule over ashes. They just want to make sure they rule, whatever the case may be. Once they get to the place where they don't ever have to worry about a Republican again, once they get to a place where they never have to consider you or your wants or your needs, once they get, you know what, here's a great example. I played this MSNBC lady earlier, and you notice how she threw in the disclaimer, like we talked about earlier. I'm not talking about Christians, not Christians.
One thing that unites all of them, because there's many different groups orbiting Trump, but the thing that unites them as Christian nationalists, not Christians, by the way, because Christian nationalists is very different.
Their goal is to get to a place where they don't have to throw in those disclaimers. Because they have so much power. They have so much control. They just want to be able to go on television and say, yeah, we're coming after Christians and Christianity. We're coming after all of you. They're in a place right now. There are so many millions of good people in this country that they're in a place right now where they still have to lie. They still have to hide the truth. And as long as that's their position of power, they will continue with the anarchy phase of pro-rape, pro-murder, pro-chaos, to create angst and anxiety in society. But if they're successful and they get past that phase, if they're able to get to a place where they don't have to add disclaimers anymore, you will see the streets cleaned up like that. It'll actually be a miracle. They'll probably talk about it on the world stage. Oh my goodness, look at how crime-free New York is now. And it won't just be New York, right? It'll be everywhere. Whoa, we've never seen Detroit this crime-free. No murderers this year. Really? What'd you do, guys? Oh, we took all the criminals out and shot them. Shot them all in the face. Look at this, crime-free now. We told you we would take care of you, didn't we? Just give us all the power in the world. Granted, your child chopped his penis off and you're not allowed to go to church anymore because we burned it down and crucified your pastor, but it's crime-free around here, guys. You can roll your eyes and say I'm being over the top. That's what they've done in every country they've taken hold. It's not like I'm telling you some fairy tale that might happen in the future. They've done this a million times in the past, and they'll do it again here. All right, enough.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Two Clark County technical employees came forward completely independent of each other and explained that they discovered that the number of votes recorded by voting machines and stored on USB drives would change between the time the polls were closed at night and when they were reopened the next morning. In other words, votes were literally appearing and disappearing in the dead of night. When we attempted to verify the integrity of these voting machines, we were allowed only a useless visual inspection of the outside of a USB drive. We were denied a forensic examination.
Hello? Zealanders quoted a lot the 96% efficacy that was quoted by Pfizer. Do you think that was remotely accurate?
Let's see. Pfizer did the study. Pfizer wrote the study, and then Pfizer said what they said. Nobody independently checked it. And then they wanted to hide their data for 75 years. That effective? Absolutely not. And they did what's called relative risk reduction instead of absolute risk reduction, which is what is required for an FDA application. So their absolute risk reduction, the true effectiveness is 0.86%, less than 1%. So it was never 95, 96% effective, never. It was less than 1% effective from the beginning. And that's from their own data that the United States government forced them to release. So they lied, they hid it. There were more people that died in their trials than in the placebo group. There were more people harmed in their trials than in the placebo group. Their efficacy was a complete lie. If something is not safe, it doesn't matter how effective it is. They knew from the very beginning it wasn't safe, and it's absolutely not effective. And then when other variants came along, they didn't even do the appropriate studies on any.
Why has the Dutch government, a guy called Rutte, the prime minister, completely owned by the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab, why has he just announced that the Netherlands, the second biggest exporter of food in the world, is targeting farmers to destroy them and get them off the land, which is where all these farming protests in the Netherlands have come from? At a time of food shortages and supply chain problems, you are targeting the second biggest exporter of food in the bloody world to destroy its farming base. Why are you doing that? If people depend on you for what's left of the food, you control them. Where food is abundant and cheap, you do not control them. Where energy is cheap and abundant, you do not control them. Scarcity equals dependency equals control. And that's why they're targeting the food chain, they're targeting the energy supply, they're targeting everything.
Americans are spending a bigger part of their income on food than they did 30 years ago. In other words, at least going by food costs, we have made zero progress in 30 years. In fact, just last week, the Wall Street Journal actually published an article titled, quote, "To save money, maybe you should skip breakfast." Not a joke. I've mentioned in recent videos how government spending and mandates have gutted our productive economy. Despite the media's happy talk and useful advice about skipping breakfast, we are to the point that while each generation used to get much richer than their parents, in fact, almost double their parents' income, today millennials pine for the glory days of their youth, living in an actual house their parents owned instead of eating ramen at 40 with their roommates. A few days ago, the same Wall Street Journal put some stark numbers on it, reporting that the last time Americans spent this much of their paycheck on food, the internet did not exist, Terminator 2 was in the theaters, and Madonna was still rocking the pop charts. Americans now spend 11.4% of their income on food, with both groceries and restaurants getting worse. That's up from just over 9% before the pandemic and before Joe Biden. The journal thinks this will keep getting worse because of soaring prices for inputs and labor costs, especially since 22 states just hiked their minimum wage, which hits food production hard. Meanwhile, Americans' income, the other half of that number, have actually been falling since Joe Biden took office. According to my colleague EJ Antoni, the typical American household has lost $7,400 in lost annual income after inflation. You had recently bought a house, that loss is almost double. So incomes are falling, food's more expensive, we are moving backwards. The journal notes correctly that food prices are never coming back down. At least it's never happened under the modern Federal Reserve. Any inflation they take, they keep. Even Joe Biden's supposed inflation victory just meant prices went up slower. They never went down. Ironically, that same Joe Biden was recently threatening food companies for reducing portions, which they do so consumers can afford the product, because his talking point is that printing money to fund $7 trillion of deficits, which largely are buying wars and the COVID lockdowns, had nothing to do with prices. It was all corporate greed. As in, companies were not greedy under Trump, but now they suddenly are. As Tom Woods puts it, that's like somebody asking why a plane crashed and Boeing says it was gravity. So what's next? Brought to you by Unchained.com. Harder times won't be news to people who are actually living in Joe Biden's economy, for those who can see past the manipulated and cherry-picked government statistics. From shrinking houses and falling homeownership, those millennials with ramen, to second jobs and now soaring food burdens, we're seeing real-world indicators that Americans are no longer making progress, that the golden goose is dying. A fresh episode of the podcast just dropped where I round up all the weekly videos. Check it out at petersaintange.com. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.
Okay, this is crazy, right? This guy is the funeral director over in the UK, Looney, right? And listen to what he's got to say. I nearly fell off my bed.
There is a doctor in Australia called Dr. Luke McClendon. He leads the fertility services at the Mater Hospital and is the principal investigator for a series of randomised controlled trials. He's also the president of the Australian Institute for Restorative Reproductive Medicine. He's the top doctor in Australia in this field and he's been sacked. Now, why has he been sacked? He got sacked on Friday for not getting the jab and for trying to release his data on miscarriages post the jab. He has until next Friday to get out of his private practice rooms as he is no longer allowed to practice either in public or in private. He told me that he has been investigating miscarriages in couples post-vaccination, and he said that normal miscarriage rate is between 5 and maybe as high as 16%. But he's since been keeping stats since the introduction of the vaccine, and he's found that 74% of women who are vaccinated are now having miscarriages.
74%. 74%.
However, the vaccine is incredibly risky, and it is basically it's achieving its goal. If the goal was to reduce the world's population, it's working.
First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. New vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
The key paradox is if you look at the mortality rate in the United States, one of the most highly funded medical care systems in the world, and what we find is the mortality in the United States is among the worst in the world.
If you look at these innumerable failed policies, there's only one way to understand them. They are literally written by pharmaceutical companies. They can design trials to fail to disprove the use of cheap medicines, and they can make things appear that they don't work.
I sit as a non-voting member of the Active Committee for Drugs with NIH. I've seen the dynamics of what are going on with all those trials, which most of which have failed. Unfortunately, it's eminently possible to manipulate the outcomes of a clinical study. If you want a study to fail, that's dead easy.
Now their fourth quote-unquote negative study of ivermectin in a major medical journal, and each time is a media frenzy.
There was a systematic review looking at randomized controlled trials that have been done, and they found that there was no benefit for ivermectin in reducing mortality, death to COVID-19, no reduction in symptoms or duration of symptoms for COVID-19, so it does not work.
People need to understand that academics have been threatened with losing their position and threatened with getting no further research grants if they speak out against the narrative. Guess why that is? 2/3 of the world's non-commercial biological research is funded by just three bodies. The Wellcome Trust in the UK, the NIH, and specifically the NIAID under Tony Fauci, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
There's this pattern that is consistent with a concerted effort to mislead the public by withholding information using modern technology, media, censorship, really, let's call it what it is, thought control.
One of the primary sad things that they refuse to recognize, that I know you know that in even grade school sciences, CO2 is a gas of life. When you have more CO2, the plant kingdom, the whole ecology, even the oceans, gonna have more, basically, ability, more fishes, more everything.
More life.
More life, essentially. That's why it's called gas of life. And these people want to demonize it as some gas that can cause global warming, can cause hurricane to run faster or weaker. I don't know what they want. To have more rain, more droughts, and all this other nonsense that they claim. All of that, it just ain't so. That's the problem. By the way, this is how serious I am. I check everything they say. I check. As a scientist, you cannot just dismiss them. You cannot laugh at them. You cannot, you know, chide them. You cannot just make joke of them. You check everything. So as a very serious scientist, and I publish scientific paper refuting all of this argument. Scientific papers maybe mean nothing to the average people, but it's really important. It's like a document that you have to document and then put out the proper scientific arguments about what is right, what is wrong.